Morning, everyone. Would you be worried if I said that that was my sermon? The good news is, you've already heard that bit, and that's next bit. Well, just looking back at, I thought it must be a long time since I started, Joseph, and it's actually, there's 12 sermons there. I only preach once on a month, on a Sunday morning, which is the only time they've been preached. So we start a new year. I'm into another year with Joseph, so, and it's not finished yet. So if you're not being for a while, then you're going to get another Joseph sermon. But it's just amazing how God keeps sort of revealing things as I start looking at what I think is quite an easy chapter to preach through, and there's not much, then it just goes and then it opens up. So I hope you are enjoying it. I'm enjoying studying it, even if you wouldn't enjoy listening to it. I've nearly got a book there. Right, this morning I've entitled it 7, God's number. And you'll see why as we go through. 7, God's number. The reading that we're going to do this morning is Genesis 45, and we're going to read from verse 9 to 28. This is starts off with Joseph's direction to his brothers, who he's now made up with. And this is what he tells them to do. Hurry up and go to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down to me. Do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me, you and your children's children, your flocks and your herds, and all that you have. There I will provide for you, lest your household and all that you have come to poverty, for there are still 5 years of famine. And behold, the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my mouth that speaks to you. So you shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt and all that you have seen, and you shall hurry and bring my father down here. Then he fell on his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept on his. Then he kissed all of his brothers and wept over them, and after that his brothers talked with him. Now the report of it was heard in Pharaoh's house. Joseph's brothers have come, so it pleased Pharaoh and his servants well. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, say to your brothers, do this, load your animals, and depart and go to the land of Canaan. Bring your father and your households and come to me, and I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you will eat the fat of the land. Now you are commanded to do this, take carts out of the land of Egypt for your little ones and for your wives, and bring your father and come. Also do not be concerned about your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours. Then the sons of Israel did so, and Joseph gave them carts according to the command of Pharaoh, and he gave them provisions for the journey. He gave all of them to each man changes of garments, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garment. And he sent to his father these things, 10 donkeys loaded with the good things of Egypt, and 10 female donkeys loaded with grain and bread, and food for his father for the journey. So he sent his brothers away, and they departed and he said to them, see that you do not become troubled along the way. Then they went out of Egypt and came to the land of Canaan, to Jacob their father. And they told him, saying, Joseph is still alive, and he is governor over all the land of Egypt. And Jacob's heart stood still, because he did not believe them. But when they told him all the words which Joseph had said to them, and when he saw the carts which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob their father revived. Then Israel said, it is enough. Joseph my son is still alive. I will go and see him before I die. We'll just leave it there for now, but we're going to look at the first 7 verses of 46 as well, which we'll do a bit later. Hopefully we'll actually finish chapter 46. So if you remember last time, we looked at the big reveal. How Joseph had at last revealed himself to his brothers, and how at last he realized it was all about God preserving life. God had revealed the reason for Joseph's life in Egypt. Two big reveals last time. Well, the next part of Joseph's story is all about a family reunion and a journey and sevens, as we're going to see. I really want to talk more about chapter 46 this morning, but I just wanted to mention some significant things from chapter 45, first of all. What's happening here is, so Joseph has sent off his brothers with some urgency to bring his father Jacob back to Israel. If we look at verse 11, it says, "There I will provide for you, lest you and your household and all that you have come to poverty, for there are still 5 years of famine." Joseph says that there's still 5 years of famine to go. How many years of famine was there altogether? There were 7 years of famine. So that's your first seven this morning. There were 7 years of famine. But when you think about that, already famine had ravished the land. Already everyone was coming to Egypt because there was nothing left to eat. This was a proper world famine. And yet, they're only 2 years in. There's still another 5 years of famine left yet. What are all the other people going to do? What would, you know, Joseph's family have done if God hadn't provided a way for them? If Jacob didn't go to Egypt, he and his family would probably have starved to death because of the another 5 years of famine. God, through Joseph, was preserving the life of his chosen people, Israel, wasn't he? That was the start of the Israelite nation. In this, it reminds me of how God makes all things work together for good to those who love him, his family. It was Joseph at that time, wasn't it? And Jacob and all his family that were the chosen people. But now, that is us, isn't it? We're the family of God, and he makes all things work together for good to us as we love him. The second point that I want to bring this morning is how God works on and through people who don't know him. And they can't stop it. And sometimes they don't even recognize that's what's happening. Look at what Pharaoh did for Joseph and his family next. Verse 17 to 20 talks about Pharaoh telling them, load up your animals for the journey with provisions to get there and back. You know, and take carts with you to bring the whole family back that can't walk, the children and your father. Bring the whole family back, Pharaoh tells them. Pharaoh says, when they come back, that they can have the best land in Egypt. I think that's quite strange, really, because obviously Pharaoh had family and, you know, he had important people in the land. But yet he says, when you bring your family back, you can have the best land in Egypt. He also went further than that. Pharaoh said, don't worry about your goods because you can have the best of the land of Egypt. So not only was he going to give them, you know, a place to live and lands and stuff, but he was going to provide for them all the other things that they needed as well. The goods that they couldn't carry, like beds and wardrobes and, you know, whatever they had, yeah. The stuff, the junk, if you like, but needed to live. But Pharaoh says, oh, you can have these as well. That's amazing, isn't it? When you think about that, why did Pharaoh do this? I think partly because it was out of respect for what Joseph and what he'd done, wasn't it? I think that the main thing is it was because he was under God's influence and power and he couldn't do anything else. You know, God influenced him and put his power upon him so that he had to do that. And I think that probably being king, he didn't realize that it was God's influence on his life. You know, he probably thought, I'm the king and I can sort of do this. This reminded me that here we see God's power to influence and control what were the world powers at that time. Pharaoh was the man. But God never changes. He can still and will do the same today when he wills it. God is in charge, not world leaders or armies. It's God. They can only go so far. Pharaoh could do nothing about the 7 years famine. Going off at a bit of a tangent here, but you know that Egyptians worshipped all types of gods, and some of them were gods of harvest and sunshine and rain, and you know, and all these had just completely and utterly failed. You know, and Pharaoh could do nothing about it. It didn't matter what he sacrificed or how much they prayed, those 7 years of famine were coming, weren't they? They'd already got to, and there was another five, so he couldn't do anything about it, or about God preserving his people through Joseph. It was out of his control, even though he maybe thought he wasn't. My next point this morning is found in verse 26 to 28, and I'll just read you these. And they told him, saying, Joseph is still alive and is governor over all the land. And Jacob's heart stood still because he did not believe them. But when they told him all the words which Joseph had said to them, and when they saw the carts which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob their father revived. Then Israel said, it is enough, Joseph my son is alive, I will go and see him before I die. Sounds like Jacob were quite poorly, don't it, at this stage? Quite close, maybe quite close to death. When Jacob hears that his son is still alive, in mine, it says that his heart stood still. Now, I don't know whether it actually meant that he had an heart attack or, you know, just the shock sort of paralyzed him for a while and he didn't believe them. Then he saw the carts which they brought back and the things which they brought back and he realized that, yeah, this was true. Here is a PPI moment for Jacob. All that he'd thought he'd lost in that second was being restored. This morning, God is a God of restoration and revival, isn't he? In verse 27, it says, and Jacob's spirit was revived. When he had that encounter, his spirit was revived. When God did the work in him, he was revived. That's what happens when God brings us to those PPI moments. Our spirit is revived and our spirit is restored and restoration comes. Now, the bit that I really want to talk about this morning was chapter 46. Don't worry, I'll not be too long. I just want to read you the first seven verses of chapter 46. Yeah, seven again. You'll realise why I didn't want to read the middle bit, because I'm going to leave the last two verses as well, because it's just a list of people's names, Hebrew names. I don't like them. Not the people, I just don't like reading the names. So we're not going to read that bit. So I'm going to read from verse 1 to verse 7 to start with. So Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. Then God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here I am. So he said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not fear to go down to Egypt, for I will make of you a great nation. I will go down with you to Egypt, and I'll also surely bring you up again, and Joseph will put his hand on your eyes. Then Jacob arose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob, their little ones, and their wives in the carts which Pharaoh had sent to carry them. So they took their livestock and their goods, which they had acquired in the land of Canaan, and went to Egypt, Jacob, all his descent, and all its descendants with him. His sons and his sons' sons, his daughters and his daughters, his sons' daughters, and all his descendants he brought with him to Egypt. Now that verse 1 of chapter 46, really I could have preached on all morning. So what I'm going to bring from that is sort of a brief thought of what way I got started thinking about this one. It is a massive verse. I'm going to briefly do three which I think are significant things that are mentioned here. First of all, Jacob starts his journey to Egypt, and it says, with all that he had, all his family, all his animals, all his wealth. Can you imagine what a massive undertaking that was? Can you imagine if we just tried to get together and get our families together and have a trip to Brid, as we're going to do, and sort of the undertaking that will be. But then can you imagine doing that in a time of famine, in a time of hardship, you know, when people weren't really fit because they weren't having the food, they weren't, you know, there's a lot of things to take into account here, isn't there? Everyone and everything had to go with them. Nobody could be left. They couldn't even leave one sheep or one animal because it would die. Everything that they owned and had to go with them. When you think about that, that's a very severe famine, isn't it? That the dent, they couldn't leave even anyone to look after the house. They had to take everything. The second thing that I want to mention is it says that in verse 1, with all that they had, they came to Beersheba. Now, if you were to have a look in Genesis 21, and verse 22 to 34, you can read the story of what happened at Beersheba. But just briefly, because I don't want to take all morning, Beersheba is a place where a covenant had been made between Abimelech, which was the leader of an army of the Philistines, and Abraham, who Jacob was a descendant from. A place where a promise had been sealed by the giving of some lambs to seal the promise. Does anybody know how many lambs were given? You should have a clue with my title this morning. There were seven ewe lambs given at Beersheba for the contract to be done, you know, for the deal to be signed between Abimelech and Abraham. Beersheba is the place where Abraham reopened a well to provide life-giving water for him and his flock. It was a place that became a place of blessing and a place of worship. It was a place where Abraham planted a tree and worshipped God. If you think about that, it's a very significant ancestral place. Jacob had returned to a place that somehow he knew was a significant place of God. And it says that there, at the end of verse 1, that Jacob offered sacrifices to the God of his father. Jacob offered sacrifices to the God of his father. That's quite significant, isn't it? Jacob returned to a place where, if you think about it, how would he have known that that was that particular place, that it was a place of blessing, nor that it was a place where Abraham had been? That is because they kept records, didn't they? And they passed things down through their ancestors, so he knew it was an important place. If you think about that, though, the way it says, and he offered sacrifices to God there. In a time of uncertainty and a time of famine, Jacob offers sacrifices to God. Excuse me. Out of a place of tiredness and uncertainty and need, Jacob blesses God with a sacrifice that is obviously costly. You know, what did he sacrifice? Whatever it wasn't people, were it? It was food. It was animals. It was whatever it was, he doesn't say. But that cost him, didn't it? Thinking about a time of famine and everything, every single little lamb was precious, wasn't it? Every grain of corn. And yet, what does he do? He sacrifices to God there. He realizes that something important is happening. And sometimes God asks of us costly sacrifices, doesn't he? Out of our tiredness, out of uncertainty sometimes, and even in times of need, God still requires of us a sacrifice that hurts sometimes. Why? To show our obedience and to show our love for him, you know, and to show that we understand that something is happening. Significant thing is that look what happens to Jacob after he brings the sacrifice. In verse 2, God speaks directly to Jacob again. Now he has an encounter with God. Let me just read you verse 2 and you'll see something significant here. Then God spoke to Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here am I. Did you notice how God spoke to him? In visions of the night. God spoke to him, it says, you might say in yours, in dreams. Again, the dream cycle is carrying on, isn't it? It wasn't just Joseph. Joseph's father, Jacob, also was a spiritual dreamer. God speaks through dreams, there's no doubt. Not only through dreams, but through other ways as well. But here, there is evidence that God speaks again through a dream to Jacob. God calls Jacob by name. He says, Jacob, Jacob. And his response is, here am I. That reminds you of the story of Samuel, doesn't it? Straight away. After sacrifice, God spoke clearly and gives direction clearly. And our response to God's God-given dreams and direction has to be the same as that. Here am I. Lord, I'm ready. And you might not realize here, and I only realized as I was studying this and looking at things that had happened previously, but here is another seven. You can work that one out. Took me a while. This was the seventh time that God had spoke directly to Jacob so far in his life. So there's another seven for you there. I'll be keeping a track of these. In verses 3 to 5, some amazing promises are given by God. First of all, he says, I am God, the God of your ancestors. You know, he truly revealed himself again afresh to Jacob. Secondly, he says, don't be afraid, go down to Egypt. So he's like, is he obviously understanding how Jacob's feeling? You know, and saying, don't be afraid, go down to Egypt. You know, it's going to work out. So God is bringing peace and protection into the situation, isn't he? The other amazing thing is that he says there at the end of verse 3, I will make of you a great nation there. You know that those words, those exact words, except for the there, were given to someone else as well, weren't they? They were given to Abraham, yeah, his ancestor. I will make a great nation of you, he told him. And he said there, I will make a great nation of you there. So he was promising that when they went to Egypt, God was going to fulfill the promise of a great nation through that family line. It shows that God's promises to past generations still continue and come to being. Exactly the same words as spoken to Abraham are spoken to Jacob. That shows me and speaks of a God of continuity, doesn't it? A God who brings about his promises, a God who works through generations of families, not just a single family. God doesn't stop at the end of one generation. He brings something new, doesn't he, through the next generation. He continues the promise. In verse 4, I will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also surely bring you up again, and Joseph will put his hand on your eyes. God also says, I will go with you to Egypt, and I will surely bring you up again. When he talks about there of surely bring you up again, it makes you think that he's going to take them to Egypt and bring them back out, doesn't he? God was going to be with them in their time in Egypt and would eventually bring Jacob's descendants up out of Egypt. But that is some 400 years later when that one is fulfilled. It's not Joseph and it's not Jacob. It's generations and generations, well, 10 or 12 generations further on. You know, that 400 years later, just about. God's promises are sure and reliable. The amazing thing here, and I hadn't really realized, is that Jacob's journey to Egypt began a 400 years stay in Egypt, which took them away from the promised land. Took them away from the land of Canaan. Jacob, this is an amazing fact, Jacob entered Egypt with 11 sons. Joseph was already there, which made 12 sons. And then the sons that they had. But when he would leave 400 years later, they'd got a mini nation. If you actually can guess how many people left in the Exodus, there might have been millions. You know, in that time that they've been there 400 years, God did truly make, you know, a nation out of this family. 12 sons and a father. How God blessed them in Egypt. And if you think about it, all started with a dream for Joseph. And now the dream for Jacob was beginning to happen, wasn't it? The dream what God had given Jacob. Now from verse 7 to verse 27, it tells us about who Jacob took with him. It talks about the male line of Jacob, all the sons and their sons. Unfortunately, ladies, it doesn't mention the ladies, but they went as well. But there's something significant in the male line of what went off here, and we're going to have a look at that a little bit. As I said, I don't really like reading Bible names because they get quite complicated to sort of pronounce, don't they? But there's a few people in this list that I want to quickly mention. As I said, it only lists Jacob's sons and male heirs, so a lot of people aren't even numbered here, but something special happens when we count the male descendants of Jacob in Egypt. Let me read you, and you'll know what number I'm coming to here, just about. Verse 26 and verse 27. All the persons who went with Jacob to Egypt, who came from his body, besides Jacob's sons and wives, were 66 persons in all. The sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were two persons. All the persons of the house of Jacob who went to Egypt were 70. Another seven. So, not including Jacob, 66 male descendants went with him. Jacob made 67. And then Joseph and his two sons made it 70. Another 10 times 7. God moves in amazing ways, doesn't he? And as you look through the Bible, 7 is a very important number. And don't ask me why, because I have no idea why God chose 7 and not 6 or 5 or whatever. But it seems such a significant number through the Bible, a 7. And as you can see through this story, there's a lot of 7s in it. And finally this morning, I just want to mention a couple of people from this list. We're not going to read the whole list. If you want to, you can. Mentions everybody and some quite weird names. Probably were not even ever mentioned again in the Bible, but there are some significant people here. I just want to read you verse 11. And it says, the sons of Levi were Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, or something like that. These boys or men became the founders of the Levitical families, the priests. In particular, it seems that this Kohath is very significant because he became the founder of the priestly family from which Abraham and Moses descended, the people who in 400 years' time, you know, led them in the Exodus. If you want to look at that, that's in Exodus 6, chapter 6 of Exodus. 400 years later, these people became the fulfillment of God's promise that he would take them back out of Egypt from the same line. The Exodus was led by Aaron and Moses, wasn't it? What a plan from a simple dream or two that had happened here. So this morning we see a God of dreams working through generations to bring about his promises. It's not just about us. It's not just about the generations that have laid the plans and done the work that lead us to where we are now. But it's also about the generations to come that fulfill God's work and finish God's plans and visions and dreams and promises. It's all about God's plan to preserve life as it was then. Now the plan is salvation, isn't it? That is the way God is preserving life. He wants people to have everlasting life. We're involved in that plan. Amen. And the last 7 is, that's number 7 of my notes. So there you go.